Well, welcome friends, new and old. Let's go around and just introduce ourselves, and then I'll introduce our time together, and we'll get started. And tonight, in recognition of the fact that a jazz concert is starting at 9, I'll just say when we get to 9, and those of you who would like to head out are welcome to head out, and I think we'll probably finish all together a little bit earlier than we normally would, unless stories are just humming, and then we'll see. They're recording it for a part of the history archives. Let's do introductions first. I'm Chris Sharon, and with my wife Sonia, I'm serving as teaching staff coordinator this summer.
I'm a mostly retired Lutheran pastor, Paul Gilbertson. We live in the Denver area. You've probably heard a lot of Gilbertsons introduced last night. So yeah. My three sons are here. This is our 50th anniversary on the anniversary of Hulda. I didn't know we were sharing the same date.
Tom Carlson, wandering up to Holden since 76. And so we've seen a lot of things come and go from Carol Hinderly and Les and all kinds of things happen. So. West, I mean, I don't know what to say. We are supposed to be retired teachers, but we seem to get back into the school district. Right now we're tutors in a high school, but we never seem to retire.
Good. And a dancing queen, I am.
Yes.
I'll say who you are.
I'm Dora Carlson, and I've been coming the same amount of time to Holden. We love this place. And right now we're working in bookstore and Narnia.
Yeah, our kids were 3 and 6 when they first came, and you see the picture of the big Bernie the dog.
Well, you get to tell that later.
Okay, go.
Okay. I have to stop there.
Introductions first, then yeah. Story.
That's right. I know. We can't wait.
I'm Nancy Merrick from Bend, Oregon, and I first came in
83. Oh, same as us.
I'm Diana Klein from Whidbey Island. And we first came in 98. I thought I'd come once to see what it was like. And I have to come every year.
Barb Hazen from Silverdale. We came once when our kids were tiny, tiny in September. And somehow didn't get back here until about 5 years ago when we started raising our niece and nephew and thought this would be a perfect place to bring them. And we've been back every year since, so 5 years.
That would have been about 30 years ago.
The first one.
Yep.
It's changed lots of things. There are lots of same, but things have changed. Yeah. Doug Hayes, Barb's husband from Silver. Carol Tomer from St. Paul, Minnesota. We sang
Linden Holden. Okay. That's fine. Yes.
I first came the summer of 79 as a summer volunteer, and 80 and 84, and faster from 88 to 90 here. And currently, this is the 6th time I've brought a group from my church in St. Paul.
Mm-hmm. Great. I'm Kata Schwain, and I came for the first time in 79 also.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I'm Sonia Batalden, and the first time I came was in 78.
Wow. Bonnie Miller McLemore, and the first time I came was 2003. It was with a group of adults and teens, and I co-authored a book, Way to Live, for youth ministry. And there was funding for another group of parents and kids to come, so I came with my middle son. That was wonderful.
I'm Mark Lowe-McClure, and I must be the real newbie here because the first time I came was in 2010 with Bonnie. But really value my time here now.
You're fit, Dan, Mark. Thanks for the bluegrass tonight.
I'm Laura Gumling. This is my 4th time here. I first came in 2002. So it's actually my 10th year anniversary of being at Holden. First time I came as a guest, and been here as teaching faculty, or teaching staff as well. So.
Very good. Good. We've been organizing these 50th anniversary forums around a couple of our core values. And we have a whole list of core values that are a part of our vision, mission, and core values. Such things as you might expect, theology, worship, hospitality, but also wonderful things like hilarity. Tonight we want, because of some of the themes in the teaching staff this week, we wanted to focus on the core values of community and gifts, which intersect one another, and see if those two core values provoke particular stories of your experiences at Holden. And I asked Lori and Bonnie to offer some getting us started stories, and then we'll just invite anyone else to chime in. Let me read those core values, the descriptions of them, so you can hear how they're described. So the core value of community. We believe that the Holden community includes all who care for Holden through their labor, gifts, and prayers. That's distinctive because some people think of Holden as buildings or as the group of people who are here. And this core value really tries to say it's all who care for Holden in lots of different ways, scattered all across the world. And then gifts. We express gratitude to God for the extravagant gifts of creativity, imagination, and ingenuity in all who volunteer. And so those two core values, community and gifts, intersect and can be one shaping focus of our storytelling tonight. So Bonnie and Laura, you can lead us off, and we'll go from there.
Well, I hope this is in the range of what fits with the themes that you're identifying. Actually, when we were going around, I realized I have been here as a guest, as a volunteer staff this time in a way, and as a teaching staff. So I feel like I've been in like a lot of all of the roles, different roles. And this time is the first time I've been here with a partner who's teaching staff, and I'm not responsible for any of the ideas of the village. And I've been really grateful, actually, not to have been asked to do homilies or eye-openers or teach something or speak on something, because it's what I do. I teach at Vanderbilt, and I have lots of gifts for teaching and scholarship, but it's been a real blessing to be here in a different role. And I've always wanted to work in the laundry.
And lo and behold.
And I can testify, that's the one chore I do not complain about. I don't know what it is about folding towels and sheets. I don't even want him to fold them because I have a certain way. And they should be in the closet and they should look a certain way. I don't know. Anyway, certain chores, it's a chore I actually really love. So I've been in the laundry, not on a rigid basis, so I'm not required to be there so many hours, but I think it's been really wonderful to kind of be able to go in. And what's amazing about the people in the village is that they welcome you, whatever you do. Yeah, there's nobody, Rebecca is the person that's been in there, as well as a couple other staff, and I can't believe how gracious they are if I come or if I don't come. And I've also been doing dish team, and I just love that. And
get your name.
You got it.
I usually go in though, and I go, just clean. I don't like the wet, just the dry. So it's been wonderful to be here and be able to bring different kinds of gifts this time, and serve in different ways. What else have I done? Yeah, the other thing I've really appreciated is this is a place that you can either come and kind of be in your head, or for me, I was really ready not to be in my head, to do weaving, to do hiking, not to have to think if I didn't want to think, because that's what I have to do for my job. I love it, but it's been a nice break for the other vocation that I usually inhabit.
Wonderful. Thank you.
The values that you mentioned, I'd like to focus on the community value. And this week I've been teaching on this question of what is community and how do we live together in community through the lens of Bonhoeffer. But I haven't said much about what I see community as. And the foundation for community for me is story, narrative. Certainly the past story, the history of, or herstory, as the case may be, of Holden Village. But it just seems like wherever I go, here at Holden or out down the mountain out there in what I call the real world, because this somehow doesn't seem real to me, even though it is. Maybe it's more real. You mention the word Holden Village, and you will get a story. You will get some story. Maybe it's just, oh, I was there and I worked on dish team, or I worked in the laundry, or I taught a session, or I was there with my family for the 50th wedding anniversary, or whatever. But sometimes it's, you know, more fantastical stories, like I had friends up here 1 year when they had to evacuate the village because of the fires. I have had friends up here when the young man hiked in and got caught up on the ledge. And just story after story. So it's kind of interesting that we gather tonight to tell stories about Holden's story. And what is it that makes Holden Village, what makes the story of Holden Village? Well, obviously it's the people, it's the place, it's the creation, the nature around us. Even, I was thinking today, the number of different things that happened today, just here at Holden. We had the evacuation of the hiker, we had the llamas, which, you know, suddenly out of nowhere, there are 6 or 7 llamas marching down the street, and kids are running to pet them. We had this massive thunderstorm. I had several friends out on the trail hiking and had to hike back in the rain and came back looking like drenched rats. Each of which could be a story that defines very briefly this community. So, I think that's all I'll say about it. I have so many stories that I could share. I think the last one I'll share is just that kind of epitomizes a community for me is what happened today, also earlier, when the truck arrived in the middle of the rainstorm, and Jeannie gets on the microphone and says, "We need help unloading." Mm-hmm. So 10 people go downstairs, and we have this thing loading toilet paper off the truck for, you know, 10 minutes until it was all unloaded. Now, that wouldn't necessarily happen in many places. Maybe you get one or two, but the fact that so many people showed up to unload, says something about the story of this community.
I would say another one, just now too, as we came, where Grandma and Grandpa now, and our suitcases don't go up the stairs as well as they used to when we were in 75. But suddenly we have these boys around, and they say, "We'll help you," and boom, everything's up on the top without any problem. That's just, the kids don't even know, I think they'll remember later, but this feeling and this gift of just helping each other, like you're talking about, something needs to be done, it's done.
Yeah.
You didn't indicate that chronology was important, but I probably go back as far as anybody in terms of bringing a group here, 48 years. I heard about Holden at the seminary. I knew Carol Hinderly and Mary and knew that they were here, and that was enough to attract me.
Sure.
So on internship, myself and another intern, good friend of ours, decided to take 10 from each of our congregations, and we rented a school bus in Wisconsin and drove across all the way over, all the way back, doing chancel dramas in churches on the way, so we could sleep there.
Great idea.
We were part of, we were not officially work crew, but there was a lot of work yet to be done, and our kids, high school kids, just pitched in wonderfully. And I was part of Storycraft this afternoon, and just one story from that experience that I think relates to gifts and stories. Anders Peterson, the intern, asked me a very good question about the values early on and how I felt about that coming back. It's a different village entirely. Mm-hmm. And we expected that. And we've had to let go of a lot of memories, a lot of things that, you know, Werner Jansen was here.
Yeah,
and
it has changed.
Howard Hong was wandering around, the philosopher king, you know, mm-hmm. quoting Kierkegaard, not Bonhoeffer at that time. I'm disappointed that the sauna isn't a Howard Hahn Memorial Sauna. I think he was the originator of the sauna. It was down by the river at that time. But what I think is important is that the village continues to monitor the changes that are happening, maintaining those core values of, you know, strong Lutheran Christian belief, that it continues to be a place where grace is celebrated and that community comes together spontaneously. It's not forced, it just emerges, because that is the gift that the Spirit, I think, gives us. And so my hope and trust is that as it goes forward into the next half century, that nothing will be lost. The momentum will continue to flow, but the shape will continue to change. And those of you who return will need to let go of what's happening this week,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and embrace the new. The service tonight was just a wonderful service.
Isn't it?
But I remember when we would sing, you know, with Beanie Lundholm.
Yes.
You know, a place apart, mid towering pines and mountains.
Yes, I remember that? Sure.
A place apart to think and pray and do. We thank you, God, for your rich gift of Holden. And I don't remember the rest of it.
No, but I remember the song too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Beanie, yeah.
And, you know, there was a whole culture that emerged at that time.
Yeah.
It's now gone, but the stories continue. So, and we were back 2 years later for another family reunion. So this is our third visit, but quite an intervening time for changes to occur.
Yeah.
I think it was last summer they did a Beanie sing. I didn't know what it was at the time, but they had the booklets and they came out and was at the lunch or something and said, we're doing a Beanie sing.
Yeah, he's going to bring me the Beanie songbook. He said that the songs that Beanie used to play were... He was a professor of music at one of our colleges.
Augustana, I think it
was. Was it Augustana?
Yeah.
Really?
Which one?
Augustana.
No, Rock Island.
Okay.
One of the Beanie songbooks is just on the piano in the
main
the
building.
Hall.
Really?
And you know the espresso bar is named after Beanie too.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can still have your coffee.
I'll have to fill in the blanks to my song. But the values were just being shaped then, and it's so much fun to see what's happened.
I think that too is the people that are here. People are part of the gift, and it's always changing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the flavor of Wes Preve. You know, he was a flavor here. He was a gift.
Wow.
He had his own way of doing things, you know, and sometimes his monk robe greeting the buses, and but his gift too is with kids. You would think he played grumpy, but he had the boys around him. I know our own son, that he'd grump at him and he'd get him to carry popcorn down into the you know, snack bar and so forth, and but then they were around him again. They just loved him. He had that gift. And then he could sit down with you too and talk too at that level too. So he was a very special person that, you know, was part of Holden, the gift that isn't there anymore. It's not.
There's new gifts.
Yep. We come back, we kind of look for him, but he's...
Werner Jansen was up here a couple of weeks ago
for
the weekend telling stories. And it was remarkable to hear him talk about how many scientists volunteered their time to consult with him about issues they were dealing with up here. And all kinds of adventures and misadventures that they took as a result of trying to cope with this really strange village way out in the wilderness. And it's just the same now. I'm on the board of directors, and we have amazing scientists and environmental lawyers and so forth who are volunteering their time and helping us negotiate this big remediation project. And it's incredible to see, you know, that it's the intersection of this extended community of people. Some of them have been at Holden. Some of them only come up here because a friend said, hey, Holden needs some help and you have the skills that you want to volunteer. They come up here, fall in love with it, bring their families. So that's a really wonderful aspect of the community, all these people with technical expertise who allow what needs to happen to happen. It's really a, technically speaking, it's a village liable for all the regulations of the state of Washington for a town, water quality, sewage, all that stuff we have to meet. And we had a inspection planning for the village renovations, which are going to happen over the next couple of years, and it was a really in-depth investigation, and they found, in terms of all the buildings, no major code violations.
Wow.
So that's a testimony to all the expertise that's been volunteered over the years to keep the place in shape. I mean, there's lots of minor things that are in need of help, but in terms of safety, really good.
Terrific.
Now, the Science and Technology Advisory Committee meets twice a year, once up here and then once in the winter at Pacific Lutheran University, and people come from California, Nevada, Minnesota, as well as the local area.
I think Werner started that, didn't he? Way long.
I didn't become involved until the winter we were here, 82-83, on sabbatical, and John Schramm invited me to be on that.
That's an example.
There's about 30 people on that committee right now. It's bigger than I know it has ever been since he joined. But it's really important because everybody has a little piece.
Yeah.
And then when they leave the meeting, they all kind of know what they're going to look into. And they study and they look into the stuff. And they're experts in everything. You just name it. They're an expert in that room. And it's really wonderful. I think it's great what is happening between us and the people that are doing the remediation. Mm-hmm. I can't believe it. I mean, these guys go by, and if you wave, they'll wave at you. Mm-hmm. And I think they're stunned with the Holden, the whole Holden picture.
Not only will they wave, but I've talked to them a couple times because I'm over at Narnia.
Yeah, they talk
and
to
they'll
you
if you start talking to them, they'll stop. And I had quite a nice conversation with them. Man tonight who said how much he was glad that we thought they were careful, that they were really working on it.
Oh, yeah.
And concerned about the children, especially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where is Werner? No.
Leavenworth.
That's right.
We're trying to talk him into coming up again later in August. It was so much fun to have him up here telling stories, and he had a great time.
So is he in charge of the keep of Sleeping Lady Conference Center?
I don't know.
Who's
I don't
that?
Know. I
don't know. When we came up here, Warner said, I want to welcome you to the village for the winter, and if there's absolutely anything at all that you need, he said, come to me and I'll tell you how you can get along without it. That's true.
That's wonderful.
And we had happy exchanges, and the hood was still here with the big things. And all around this room, there were little cards or something like in one case, a pair of pants, jeans. There was a very tall young man in the village, and his jeans were worn out, and he didn't care how they were repaired, just so long that they didn't have holes in the wrong place. And so I did a wonderful exchange, and he did my dishes and I did his pants, and it worked out. But so we did everything. If you didn't have it, I mean, you know, if you ran out of shampoo, somebody probably had some you could use. So you just would exchange it. It's a great system. I don't know if they still do it. Is anybody up here over the winter? Guess not. But that was a great
trading out dish teams.
They called it Happy Exchange. Do they still do that?
It could be goods or services.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, there's a masseuse in the village, and people do exchanges with her for...
Well, the first time we came was in 1968 when the PLU faculty had a three-day retreat out here. And at that time, the Holden season ended at Labor Day. But they kept it open 3 days to accommodate us. So we had all our own program, and except there was still the evening vespers, of course. And it was just the look on the faces of the people serving us in the dining room that let us know we're keep coming back here.
Yeah.
And there have been a couple of years we've missed, but
it's good.
Won't tell about the time that they built too big a fire here.
Caught the chimney on fire.
The next year when the first alcohol was brought into Holden by the new president of PLU at the time.
Or when they opened these doors down here, they didn't have a door handle on this door, because if you opened the door and there was a fire going with even two logs, never three, it just sucked all the smoke straight across and out the door. It was the most inefficient system ever. And you couldn't see anybody unless you were sitting down. So everybody gave their talks and lectures and everything sitting down. We looked through the... But if you stood up, all you could see was the bottom half.
I said at 9 o'clock I would make an announcement that it was 9 o'clock for those who want to catch the jazz concert. And some people do. And those who want to stay and continue sharing stories, you're welcome to do that.
The last time that I was here and saw Terry Sanderson, he said he didn't remember the tape he made of the session he gave on the worst day of his life.
Oh, yeah.
Which was during the winter that we were up here.
He's the mechanic.
And it was a terrible snowstorm. And it was the day that, wasn't that the day the St. Olaf students were coming in for their January term?
Something was going on, and we had to go down lake.
In the bombardiers, not in the buses, because the roads were impassable to buses. And there was an avalanche halfway down, so they sent everybody and all the equipment down to dig that out, and except for the, well, kitchen staff skied down with food and coffee for them.
Yeah, hot soup and
they just kept working at it. Mm-hmm. And the pastor, Maynard Johnson, almost went over the edge in one of the plows, but didn't.
They were actually between two avalanches for a while, and they couldn't come up here or go down. And we got to thinking about fire.
Were there enough people left in the village to hold a hose?
Yeah, because you have to have about 20 people at least on the hose. Otherwise, if you turn the water on, it blows the hose house up. You know, I mean, because you got to have it all the way out of the hose house. And then you have to have a couple of pretty studly people on the end to hang on to that
nozzle.
Because that nozzle is heavy and it really, it packs a wallop when that water comes out. So we've done all of our stuff, but you have to have people that will go into the attic spaces. If there's a fire alarm that goes off, there's somebody that climbs up and goes all through the attic, goes into every single room to make sure there's nobody there or the fire is out or it didn't occur.
Right. I'm curious, have there been any births, deaths, marriages here? Probably many marriages, I would think. Or any serious accidents?
There have been serious accidents.
There have been serious accidents.
Our first summer there was a major injury. Guy fell off a cliff.
Really?
Yeah, well, she said something about a cliff. I've never heard that story. I don't know what that was about.
You want to tell it, Sonia?
Well, that was a different story. Oh. There's been different hikers. There was a boy who lived in the village, a 15-year-old, who went out to 10 Mile and climbed up above. It was his favorite spot. He just wanted to be alone, but he hadn't told anyone where he'd gone. He fell off into the creek, and we didn't find him for, it was going on almost, is it two nights, Chris? 36 hours?
36 hours.
36 hours. Oh. So at that point, we pretty much closed the village down and had search parties going in all directions. And then he was in the water, which is probably what saved his life.
Well, because it was cooling him down, yeah.
And kept him from going into shock. So we found he had a head injury and a compound, a couple fractures. But we had hiked out there many times and called him, and he could hear us. But because of the rushing water, we couldn't hear him.
Oh, my.
Mm-hmm.
So this was in the summer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was my first summer out of nursing school, and I was the backup medic in the village.
Mm-hmm. What year was that?
That was 96. It was really actually an amazing story because he had this, like I said, this quite significant head injury and was having hallucinations at the time we found him. So then he was medevaced out, but 10 years later he came back to the village for the first time, and I happened to be here then too. So we were able to share stories about how he remembered that day and how I remembered that day, and sort of put those things together. Oh, yeah, he said that. Oh, yes, I said, oh. You know, it's just this wonderful exchange. And he was actually baptized that time, 10 years later, in the river when he was here.
Right up by the vehicle bridge.
Yeah.
Whole village standing on the bridge and all around the sides.
Wow. We saw one baptism, but we have no idea if that was the one or not. It was Nancy Winder, the pastor, then.
Nancy Winder?
Oh, I know Nancy. I'm just trying to remember who was the pastor then. I'm not remembering. In 96, I don't think Nancy maybe was the pastor that summer.
I think she was.
It's the years blend together. No, Nancy was not the pastor. Mm-hmm. No. So, I think about community and gifts, just even today, the evacuation that we did, and you know, the call goes out over the radio, and you have people doing all these different roles, which are already roles that they're pulled out of other things, you know, to be here and doing that outside of their roles. And just in a heartbeat, everyone's in a different space and a different...
How did you get the word today that help was needed?
Well, the first response team has pagers and radios.
But how did
how did the injured person...
Somebody walked by.
Oh.
I actually know a little piece of that because we were out hiking and at Hart, and somehow between Lyman and Hart, I think we must have been at the lake when the injured person, he hiked out 10 miles injured, and oddly, just by coincidence, we also met with, there's someone here who I met in 2005 who I became really close to, as you can do in the community, but I didn't know if I was ever going to see he and his wife again. And he was running out, just jogging. And there was somebody that the hiker had finally run into out near Hart who had already started running back to the village to notify the village. And then when our friend was running out, this guy had run a lot and said, I think you're going to be able to run faster, so it got relayed. Mm-hmm. Is this story making sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's how the news finally got back, is that one hiker relayed, it's sort of a good instance of community, relayed it to another hiker who obviously, or a runner who brought it back, and the response team began to function at that point.
Mm-hmm. And it's just this amazing, we need sandwiches for the team. I'll make the sandwiches. We need this. Okay, I'll do that. It's just suddenly everyone's doing their role. And I can carry that back.
I saw a couple minor examples of that also today. When I was on doing dish team, there was somebody, the dish team leader, had put in the trays in the wrong way, so it jammed the hot water circuit. And it just so happened that just at that minute, someone who was really experienced happened to be in the kitchen area, just coincidentally, who knew how to fix it. But you know, you sort of think, if that stops and you've got all the, it has to keep working because all the dishes, and you just kind of see how people And then I went out to the take some dishes out, and there was a fire in the toaster.
I saw that. Said,
but you know, right again, you just see people step up.
Some poor boy tried to toast his hamburger bun and it got stuck. Just got black and then started burn.
Started a fire, which you, I mean, you really don't, yeah, so just to see people, you know, immediately who know, suddenly Chris Schultz was there, which is probably somebody who you really wanted to be there to manage it, so, I don't know, just a small glimmers of how somehow.
And Honors was there reassuring the boy. Like,
you know, pastoral care.
We could all make mistakes, like, you know.
You weren't tall enough to see the sign on top of it that says toast only.
Oh, that's funny.
We also happened to be here at the time the village had to evacuate because of the Key Lake fire.
I was too.
Were you here too?
Yeah.
And what my precious memory of that was when they called us all together and gave us all the detailed instructions of an intricate but complete, successful plan for getting everybody out of there the next morning. Jess, any questions? One question. Could Butch Thompson play tonight? He'd been scheduled to play the following night.
Butch Thompson, the pianist on Prairie Home Companion. And we were getting ready to have this big concert, but we had to go. So he gave this fabulous concert just before we went out, and the fire's burning down at Donkey. We're all kind of a little skittish, you know. But they said, you know, how fast can you get out of here? And we just looked at him and said, when do you want us out of here? I mean, we could have gotten out. We could have evacuated if they'd had everything set up in an hour. I mean, we could have. It's just, it's amazing. But I will say that the training the staff gets, it's constant and it goes on all the time because we're all volunteers.
Yeah.
And volunteers simply can't know enough. You can't know enough. So it's really important. But they kept about 20 people up here. Yeah. And of course the firefighters, this was the best place they ever fought a fire. They got to sleep in the bed, they got to eat hot food, good food, cooked for them, they'd walk in and it was there, you know. They're not staying in tents.
And everybody that stayed was perfectly capable of hiking out that way if they
had
to.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, they could have gone out the other way, but a bunch of us couldn't have. I wouldn't have been able to.
I was impressed at how smoothly the evacuation went. We were told Sunday night, I assume this is the same one.
Oh, yeah.
We were told on Sunday night after Vespers to stay and that we had to be out by noon the next day.
Yeah.
And it was, there was no panic, no nothing. You know, it was just, okay, this is what we're going to do. And it just went very, very smoothly. Mm. I felt sorry for the people who had come in that day, from by train from Minneapolis or wherever, and I don't know what they did.
That was sad.
I was fortunate I had the car, but everything went smoothly. What happened to people afterwards, I have no idea. But,
well, a lot of people, after the fire was out, they didn't come because they were afraid, and so there were so many cancellations that Holden kind of sent out a little notice to a few people and said, hey, well, maybe to everybody, I don't know, but we need to make sure that all these people get back up here at some point, you know, and keep the village full, because if we don't keep the village full, there's still, you know, I mean, there's still this line, this timeline. From when that fire happened, it takes a while to recover because people don't want to come to a place that might burn up.
They set up headquarters down in the B&B and operated from there instead of up here. We actually went to Leavenworth, and I was able to find a motel. I had my two granddaughters, and so we played for a few days, but.
Cool.
We would run into people who were supposed to have come here and were told they couldn't. And so we said, no, you can't. We've come from there.
I could tell us. I could tell a story. I don't know if it fits as much with community and gifts as it does maybe with hilarity, which wasn't the topic for tonight. You can decide. And this was, the time of this was just last year when I came with a couple of teenagers from our church for a youth weekend. So this was in May when it was a couple of weekends that the Trinity College sponsors them. But this, and, so the whole village is filled with teenagers. And there are many choices of things that they have the teenagers do, similar to what, you know, it's a regular program. But one of the Trinity leaders, the students at Trinity, that coming to lead, was really interested in labyrinths. And of course, Oldenham has a labyrinth. Who's been there? Okay. Just about everybody's seen it. Have you ever been there in May?
Probably.
The snow.
Well, the Trinity student leading had not been to the labyrinth yet, but knew that there was a labyrinth there. He'd been told, and so he had planned that this one afternoon that that he would lead the walk out to the labyrinth, and so we all met. All of us met with the kids and a couple of adult chaperones, and you know, that happened to want to go along on this one. We all met here, somewhere here, right in the village, and he explained about how you should go to see a labyrinth and how you prepare yourself beforehand. And the students were, you know, mostly listening, the teenagers, the kids, and doing a pretty good job of trying not to talk. And he said, now, once we pass a certain point, then we'll be quiet and reflective. And so, they, you know, they were willing to go along with this. He had had a Holden's staff person, he had just checked with them, and they had said, yeah, you can get to the labyrinth, although snowshoes might help. And he announced that to us, but nobody really paid any attention. Why, you know, we could walk around the trails here in the village fine, even though there was some snow around. So we, heading out that way, and right when we got to the vehicle bridge that goes across, was the point when we realized, oh, now we're, there's a couple of feet of snow on the trail ahead of us. But it, being May, it was the kind of snow that sort of gets a little crusty on top. And so you're walking on the top and it's fine, except if all of a sudden then it drops out and then your foot drops 2 feet down. And you just flop over in the snow sometimes if you can't get yourself. So on this trail, you get partway out and the person leading gets lost because you can't tell where the trail is. And right. We end up off on a side trail, going through the trees, and people are falling in the snow. And it was, you'd be trying to walk. You figured out pretty soon that if you stayed exactly in the middle of the trail, you do better and you do less falling through. And but if you've got one foot off a little bit, you could just plunge into the snow and flop over, and people be trying to catch each other and help each other back up.
Oh yeah, yes.
Very contemplative. So we get out to the, finally get out to the labyrinth, a little string of kids, you know, stomping, and it's quite a bit of effort to get through this snow. You get out there, pretty much everybody's kind of lost the mood by then, but he told us, you know, once you just get to the labyrinth and then you can walk around and reflect and the things we talked about. And so we get out there, we can tell there's a labyrinth there, but you can't at all see what the paths are. The snow had melted into sort of lower spots and lumps, and you could see the circular pattern, but there's no way you could tell where you're supposed to turn and go back and make the turns and wind your way to the center. So we're out there just kind of stomping around, running into each other. Oh, I thought the path went this way. And most of the kids just kind of gave up and didn't even get to the center, or they just walk out to the center, because you couldn't tell. So we all come back. On the way back, everybody's tired. It's even worse. And so you're walking on the trail, and you fall in and plop over. And it was And the person walking behind them would just keep going. And just kind of leave them there to get flounder out. And it just came, I just started laughing. It was so funny because it was so ridiculous. And it just had absolutely nothing to do with reflecting on the labyrinth. So that was a crazy time. It didn't quite go as planned. So the next one that came in August, then I made sure I made a good trip to the labyrinth. Then I enjoyed it very much.
We are at about the time I said we would wrap up, and it will give us time to transition. And if you'd like to stay, Compline is going to happen here. Scott and Lori at 9:30.
Yes.
Yeah.
Compline will be here at 9:30, so you're welcome to stretch and then stay for Compline or whatever else your evening will hold. So thanks for coming and sharing stories, and have a wonderful night.
Thank you.